Shabbos Daf Ches. We are beginning in the Gemara on Zayin Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom of the Amud with the words Gufa. The Gemara has been teaching us since the beginning of this Perek the halachas of Hotzah, and so we are going to go more into the details regarding this particular Malacha. Gufa Amar Rav Chista teaches, no, it's kind of Rishos HaYachid. If a person were to plant a pole in a Rishos HaYachid, Vizarach Menach Al Gabav, and throw an item onto the top of the pole. And presumably what's happening over here is he's throwing an item from a Rishos Rabim and it lands on the pole that is situated in the Rishos Yachid. Gavo afilo gavo me'ama. And even if the pole is 100 amas off the ground, Chayev person would be liable as he has now transferred from a Rishos Rabim into a Rishos Yachid. Memesha Rishos Yachid ola adarakiyam. As far as the Rishos Yachid is concerned, we've discussed this idea a number of times. There is no halachic ceiling towards the Rishos Yachid, and therefore it continues to go up ad l'shamayim, ad infinitum. Now we are saying a couple of things over here. Number one, as we just stated, the Rishos Yachid status goes up ad l'shamayim, it just continues to go up, and we also seem to be saying another halacha as well, which is that if it's landing on the top of the pole, we're going to assume that the pole over here could be of any width, and therefore, even though the pole itself does not have a makom, dalad, on the top of the pole, nevertheless, one would be chayv for throwing it onto the top of the pole. Now, this introduces to us what is a big chiddush. Since the beginning of this perek, we have said as a basic halacha that in order to be chayv, it has to be an akira and an anacha off of an area that is a makom, dalad. We did point out that the hand serves as an area that is tantamount to a makom dalad, but after that, we said that the area has to physically be an area of a makom dalad. What Rav Chista seems to be introducing over here is the idea that when the item lands in Rishos Yachid, the Rishos Yachid seems to be an area which waives the requirement of a makom dalad. As we just pointed out, that is a big chiddush, and the Gemara now is going to see whether or not this is supportable. Lamer of Chista da Amar Karebi. So let's suggest that this statement of Chista goes in accordance with Rebbe. Detanya, we learned in a brisa. We saw this brisa already earlier, a couple of days back on Daf Dalid, Amud Beis. Zarek Menach al Gabi Ziz, Kol Shehu. If a person were to throw an item and it lands on a protrusion, and this protrusion could be of any sized area, Rebbe Mechayv HaChachamim Potrim, Rebbe says that one would be Chayv, the Chachamim say that you would be Potter. And what seemingly is over here, and the Gemara says this in parentheses, and perhaps this could be just simply a parish added to the Gemara, but seemingly over here there is no requirement, according to Rebbe, to have a makom dalad. If this is in fact correct, so now we have support for Rav Chista based on this understanding of Rebbe. Amar Abayis, we now turn to the top of Chesam and Aleph. B'Rishus Yachid de Kolam Lo Pligi K'Rav Chista. The girsa that we have in our Gemara is that in the Rishos Yachid, maybe everyone would agree, like Rav Chista, that you do not need a requirement of a makom dalad al dalad. El hacha, but rather over here we're discussing Ilan Homed Rishos Yachid, where a specific case, the tree itself was based, its trunk was in a Rishos Yachid, v'nofo no to the Rishos Rabim, and its branches extended outward into the Rishos Rabim, v'zarech v'nach anofo. You threw an item on to the branch of the tree. Rebbe Savar Minish Dinofo Basar Ikaro. Rebbe's of the opinion that what we're going to consider now is that the branch itself is just simply part and parcel of the tree. Rabbanan Savar Lor Minish Dinofo Basar Ikaro. And the Chachamar of the opinion that the branch is not viewed as just simply part and parcel of the tree. In terms of understanding the Gemara over here, Rashi offers two pshatim. You can see the Rashi on the top of the Amud, Shtinofo Vechule. I'm reading the Rashi inside. Dechashev agav ikaru de isbe dalin. Uderav chista de lo karebi u de lo karabana. Now, in one girsa that Rashi has, in one explanation that Rashi has, we're going to say as follows. That because the trunk of the tree is in a Rishos Yachid, but more importantly, because the trunk of the tree has a makam dalad, so therefore, according to Rebbe, we're going to say that the branch itself, even though it physically doesn't have a makam dalad, but we're going to give it the dimensions of a makam dalad because it's attached to a trunk, which does in fact have a makam dalad. Now, in Rashi's first explanation over here, Rashi says it very clearly that Rav Chista is not supported neither by Rav Chista nor by the Chachamim. And that would seem to be, suggest that, according to this first Pshan Rashi, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to delete that line of the Gemara, the top of the Gemara that we just read. in that nobody really is supporting the position of Rav Chisda. You always need an area of a makom dalad dalad, even if it's in a rishus yachid. And the only question over here is that are we going to take the makom dalad dalad, which is found by the trunk of the tree, and are we going to extend it to the branch and say that the branch too now is going to be an area of a makom dalad dalad? That is the first pshat that Rashi offers in the Gemara, and that according to this pshat, now it means that nobody is supporting the statement of Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda remains an unsupported statement. Rashi then goes on, Lishna Achrina, Rashi gives another pshat in the Gemara, Amar Abaye b'der Rav Chisda dahave, b'rishus yachid afilu rabbanan mode. Here, in the second explanation of Rashi, we're going to say that both the Chachamim and Rebbe agree that in Rishus Yachid you do not need an area of a makom dalad dalad. And by the way, this second explanation of Rashi certainly seems to have the girsa that we have in our Gemara that we just read. And going back to the Rashi, v'chi pligi rabbanan, b'shti nofa basari karo hu de pligi. And now the question is that are we going to take the branch and are we going to bring it back to the base of the trunk? Meaning, in the second pshat of Rashi, exactly as we read in the Gemara, but the simple pshat of the Gemara, in that the trunk of the tree is in the Rishus Yachid, the branches extend to the Rishus Rabim, I threw it onto the branches. If we say that the branch is just really just an extension of the trunk, so that means you threw it into Rishus Yachid. And as a result of that, you're going to be chayev, because we're going to say that here everyone agrees to Rav Chisda that once we bring it into the Rishus Yachid, so then you don't need a makom dalad dalad. As opposed to the Chachamim, we're of the opinion that if you threw it into the Rishus Yachid, in a chinami, you don't need a makom dalad dalad. But because we do not take the branch and extend it back to the trunk, so therefore you did not throw it into Rishus Yachid, but rather you threw it into the Rishus Rabim, and there everyone is going to agree that you need a makom dalad al dalad. Those are the two pshatim that we just offered in the Gemara. We continue in the Gemara. Amar Abaye. Abaye now gives us another halacha regarding the malach of Hotza'a, Zark Kaveres L'Rishus Rabim. So you threw a basket into a Rishus Rabim. We are now describing a cylindrical basket that you threw into Rishus Rabim, Gvo Yud Ve'in Rachvavav, if it is 10 tfachim high, but it is not 6 tfachim in diameter. Chayiv, one would be chayiv for throwing it, Rachvavav, but once it's 6 tfachim in diameter, Pater, so then it would in fact be exempt from the Malacha of Hotzah. In order to facilitate understanding over here of the Gemara, so let's make a couple of introductory points. First of all, a little bit of math for this daf. In order to appreciate and understand the Gemara over here, so we have to make the following assumptions, which are mathematically correct. When you have a square, so that of course means that the length and the width are going to be equal with one another, so then its diagonal is going to basically be its length and then an additional 0.2. So that means to say that if its length is 1, so its diagonal is going to be 1.2. Now that mathematically is not perfect. Based on Pythagorean theorem, if you have a square and you run a diagonal across it, so its diagonal is actually going to be mathematically 1.41. But for the purpose, and it's an irrational number, it goes on and on from there. But for the purposes of our discussion, we can just keep it nice and simple, and we could just simply say that it's going to be 1.4. By the way, I made a mistake. I said 1.2. It's 1.4. So its diagonal is going to be 1.4. And that's the Gemara's assumption. The Gemara knew about Pythagorean, did not know about Pythagorean theorem, irrelevant. As far as the Gemara is concerned, once you have a diagonal of a square, so it's going to be a ratio of 1 for its length, 1.4 for its diagonal. That is the Gemara's assumption. And again, it is as close to mathematically correct. It's close enough in order to continue with this discussion. Furthermore, when you have a square, so and you want to inscribe it within a circle, so that means to say that the diagonal of the square is also going to be the diameter of the circle. Now, if you are looking at a picture, so this facilitates much better understanding. But in the meantime, however, I'll just say it one more time. If you inscribe a square within a circle, so that means that the diagonal of the square is going to be the diameter of the circle. So now, let's just put all this information together. If I have a square that is 4x4, and you'll see in just a moment why specifically this particular measurement. So that means that its diagonal, again, we're going to assume that the ratio between length and or width of a square is going to be 1.4 for its diagonal. So you take 1.4 and you multiply that four times, and you're going to get to 5.6. And so now the diagonal, when the square is 4 by 4, the diagonal is going to be 5.6. And not only is that going to be the diagonal of the square, but when then I take that square and inscribe it within a circle, so the 5.6 is also going to be the diameter of a circle. Okay, and now, why does all that become critical? Because we're talking about our barrel. Our barrel over here, which I threw. And when you throw it, so if the dimensions of this barrel are basically a Rishus HaYachid, where it's 10 tefachim in height, and it is going to be 4 by 4 in its length and width. Now, of course, 4 by 4 is a little bit strange because it is not square, it's circular. And that's why we needed the conversion. Meaning we know that if its diameter is less than 6, now, even though the Gemara says less than 6, the Gemara really means less than 5.6. As Rashi points out over here, the Gemara is low duck, the Gemara is not being imprecise, and the Gemara is being a little bit machmir, because anywhere between 5.6 to 6, it's probably larger than a 4x4 area, but just for the purposes of making a point and using whole numbers, and the Gemara is going to be a little bit machmer, we're just going to put the cutoff at 6 in the diameter. If it's less than 6 in diameter, so we're going to say that it's not an area of 4x4. If it's an area greater than 6, for sure then the square area inscribed within the circle is going to be 4x4. And all this brings us to what point? So you take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi writes, Rach v'dala pater, that if it's wider than 4, it's going to be, one would be pater. To have a rishus la'atzma, v'anami mishkan gamrin. And so Rashi over here gives us the most basic information in terms of what the Gemara is predicated on. And that is that when it comes to the malacha v'otza'ah, so we learn the malacha from the mishkan. And Rashi continues, shayu zorkin machtehen b'malachtam zelazem. What they would do in the Mishkan is they would throw needles one to another. V'la yuzorkin rishuyos. However, if an item was just simply huge, if it was too big, so that was something that is not thrown from one person to another. What's the definition of too big? Once the item is so big that it itself could define as its own rishus, so then it is no longer considered a kli, but rather it's considered now a rishus bifnei atzmo, its own independent rishus, and therefore, it does not follow the model of Hotzah, and one would not be Chayev. And so therefore, as long as the barrel is big enough where it could, in theory, be the size of a Rishus Bifnei Atzma meaning a Rishus HaYachid, so then as long as the barrel is 10 Tefachim high, and an area 4x4, so then throwing it on Shabbos would not violate the Malacha of Hotzah. Rashi continues, I'll just read the next part of Rashi. V'im tomar b'delogva asara nami rishus la'atmahi d'ha shmar karmelis. So Rashi points out, even if it's less than 10 tefachim high, doesn't it follow to be a karmelis, as we learned earlier in this parak? Ha'hi lav mid araisa hu rishus. So it's true that it is a domain, but a domain only identified by the Chachamim, not by the Torah. Ela mid rabbanan. V'lo l'hakel adivrei Torah ba'kegon ze shi pater mechatas. And over here, the Chachamim did not give it a status of a karmelis only so that it would create an exemption. The status of a karmelis is only there to create a chiyuv and not a patur. Over here, it would create a patur, and that for that, the Chachamim did not give it any status. So, let's put everything together now. Let's just reread the statement of Amaya, and let's now understand it in the context of what we just learned together. Going back to the Gemara, Amar by Zarek Kaveris Rishus Rabin. So if I'm throwing the Kaveris in the Rishus Rabin, and it's Gvo Yud Ve'inu Rech Vavav, so it's 10 Tefachim high, but it does not have the area, does not have a diameter of 6, which consequently means it does not have an area of 4x4, Chayev. So then it is not large enough. It qualifies as a throwing of a Kli, and therefore you'd be Chayev. Rach vavav, but once it is 6 tefachim in diameter, which means that its area is 4x4, so then it's too big to be qualified as a kli, and throwing it on Shabbos would be pater, as we just learned together, because it is not a kli, it's too big to be a kli. We'll call it the throwing of a rishus, but it just simply means that it's too big to be a kli. Rav amar afilu eino rach vavav pater. Now Rav is of the opinion that even if the diameter of the barrel is not 6, it would be pater. Now, why would that be? My time, Yefshar Lekrumi Shalkanish Lo Yalu Lamala Me Asara. Because according to Rava, this barrel over here is not perfectly designed, and it is 10 tefachim high, but the truth of the matter is because it's made out of wicker, so that means that there are going to be pieces of the wicker that are going to extend above the top of the barrel. So that means when you throw it, it's going to land. Now, even though the barrel itself is 10 tefachim high, but because of the wicker, there are going to be pieces of the wicker that are going to be above 10 tefachim high. And so therefore, it is not fully within a Rishos HaRabim. Some of it is going to be above the Rishos HaRabim. And so therefore, it is not considered a Malach HaVotzah, because in order to be a Malach HaVotzah, the item that you threw had to be totally in a Rishos HaRabim. And remember, as we've said time and again, the Rishos HaRabim only goes up 10 tefachim. And because some of it now goes above 10 tefachim, it is not considered as if the item was thrown in total into a Rishos HaRabim. Okay, we're going to continuing kafa al piha. If one were to invert the barrel upside down so that the base of the barrel now is facing upward and the opening of the barrel is facing downward, under those circumstances, Abai teaches us the following. Now, we're going to be assuming over here that we're describing where the diameter of the barrel is less than 6, so that it is not a makam dala dalit. It is not an area of 4 by 4. And we're going to be teaching another halacha, and that's the following. Shivu mashu chayev, shivu mechza pater. If the barrel was a height of 7 and a little bit more, a mashu, so then throwing it would be chayev. However, if it was shivu mechza, if it was 7.5, one would be pater. Now, in order to facilitate understanding over here, so let's go over a halacha that we've gone over numerous times, and that's the principle of lavud. Lava teaches me that when I have two items that are proximate to one another within 3 tefachim, so Lava tells me as if the item is connected and that area is filled in. When the barrel is 7 tefachim and just a little bit more than that, and I threw it in downward so that the opening is facing downward, so the walls of the barrel now are facing the ground, so once it reaches within just a little bit less than 3 tefachim of the ground, Lava now tells me that that area is filled in, and so therefore I have a total height of 10 tefachim. Now, because the barrel over here is not dalad al dalad, so therefore it's not a rishus bifnei atzma, but because the height of the barrel is 7 and a little bit more, so the entire barrel finds itself now within the rishus harabim. On the other hand, if the barrel was greater than 7 tefachim and a mashu. Now, I know the Gemara says the word 7.5, but 7.5 just simply means that it's more than 7 and a mashu. So if the barrel is, let's say, 7.5, so that means to say that Lava tells me that once it reaches 3 of the ground, just a little bit less than 3 of the ground, so then it is considered as if it's connected. But now, when I go to the top of the barrel, I'll note that the top of the barrel is above 10 tefachim of the ground. And so therefore, part of the barrel now is not in Rishos HaRabim. And as we just learned together, one would only be chayav when the item that was thrown into Rishos HaRabim is in total within the Rishos HaRabim. So this is the halacha of Abaye using the principle of Lavud, teaching me that when I throw the barrel upside down, because of the principle of Lavud, so then one would be chayav, but only if the entire barrel with Lavud is within 10 tefachim of the ground. But if the entire barrel with Lavud is above 10 tefachim, so then one wouldn't be chayav. Just one more point to consider over here. Rashi tells us, why is this true only when I invert the barrel upside down? Can't we say lavud even when the barrel is right side up? So Rashi says no. Because as far as the base of the barrel is concerned, because of the base of the barrel is the natural bottom of the barrel, lavud therefore does not connect the base of the barrel with the ground. And so therefore we only say lavud when it comes to the opening of the barrel and not to the base of the barrel. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Ashi amar filo shivo mechza chayev maitama mechitzos asochan asuyos. Now Rav Ashi says that no, even if the barrel is 7.5 tefachim, and even if I threw it upside down, where the opening of the barrel was facing ground, under these circumstances, Rav Ashi says that we don't apply the principle of lavud over here. Why not? Because even though lavud is true, and even though lavud is an accepted principle, halacha l'moshe misinai, that applies to walls, and extending walls upwards and downwards of just a little bit less than 3 tefachim, not in these circumstances, because these are, to just use the Gemara's terminology and say it again, mechitzos l'sochan asuyos. These walls are the walls of a barrel, and they are not meant to create any kind of partition. They are just meant to hold something. And because the walls of these barrels are meant to hold something, so therefore, Lavud is not going to allow for the extension of these walls of these barrels. Lavud will serve as an extension for walls which are used as a perimeter. Walls that are used as a way of dividing two areas, but walls that are just used to hold something inside, so for that Lavud will not extend it. So Rav Ashi disagrees in terms of the application of Lavud under these circumstances. Amar Ula, as we can now continue the Gemara, Amu Tisha B'Rishos HaRabim. V'Rabim Mechatvam Alav. Going back now to the definition of Rishos HaRabim, let's say I have a pillar that stands within a Rishos HaRabim, and it is 9 Tfachim high, and it is utilized by the Rishos HaRabim, where people unload on it and just allow the items to rest on it as they're walking by. V'Zarek V'Nachal Gabav. And one were to throw on to this pillar of 9 Tfachim, so it is in a Rishos HaRabim, and it also was facilitated and made use by the Rishos HaRabim, chayev. A person would be chayev for throwing on it, meaning that this 9 tefach pillar is going to be considered a Rishos HaRabim. Pachos Mishlosha, Midras Darsalei Rabim, and if it was, my time up, Pachos Mishlosha, Midras Darsalei Rabim. If it's less than 3 tefachim, so people walk over it, as we already discussed previously, and so therefore it's just simply part of the ground. Anywhere where the height of it is between 3 to 9 tefachim, so people don't walk right on it, and also people don't use it to facilitate a resting area. And so therefore it doesn't have any independent functionality, and so therefore it's not a Rishos HaRabim. Tisha vada mechatvim ilave. When it is 9 tefachim high, it is the perfect height for people to rest something on it, and so therefore it is viewed as part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim. Amalei Abai Rav Yosef, so Abai says to Rav Yosef, guma mai. Now what if we had a hole, a recess in the Rishos HaRabim that was 9 tefachim deep? Are we going to employ the same idea? So Amalei v'chem b'guma. So his response was, I think the same thing is true when it comes to a hole. Just like a pillar 9 tefachim is going to be facilitated and used by the Rishos HaRabim, so I would say the same thing is true regarding a hole that's 9 tefachim deep. Rav Amar Beguma Lo. Now Rav disagrees and he says, no, by a hole that's 9 tefachim deep, we are not going to be saying this. My time atashmish I did chaklosh may tashmish. Because it's true that a person can make use of a hole, but it is not convenient. And anything that does not have any convenience to it is not considered tashmish, and so therefore Rav does not qualify it as part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim. Eitzvei Rav Adabar Masna LeRava. The following question was asked, Rav HaYisaku Pasu Munachas Rishos HaRabim. Let's say you had a box that was placed in Rishos HaRabim, Gvor Asar V'Rach V'Dalet. If it is 10 Tfachim high and 4 by 4, Eim Atatan Lo Mitocha L'Rishos HaRabim V'Lo Rishos HaRabim L'Tocha. You are not allowed to transfer an item from it to Rishos HaRabim or from Rishos HaRabim to it. For the simple reason, as now we've said over time and again, this area now qualifies as a Rishos HaYachid. And anytime you make a transfer from the Rishos HaRabim to this item, you have now transferred from Rishos HaRabim to Rishos HaYachid. Now, Pachos Mikan Metaltalin. Now, anything less than that, and one would be allowed to be Metalto. Meaning, if it's less than that, so therefore it now has the status of being part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim, and as long as one does not traverse more than 4 amos within the Rishos HaRabim, so one could just simply take an item and put it on or take it off this item as long as you're standing in the Rishos HaRabim. V'chein beguma. And then the Braisa concludes by saying that the same thing that we said regarding a kupa, the same thing is going to be true regarding a guma, a recess in the ground. Now, to make sense of this Braisa, there are 2 points that were made in the Braisa. One is when the kupa is 10 tefachim high and 4x4. And then a second point is that when the kupa is 4x4, but not 10 tefachim high, meaning 9 tefachim high. So over here, when the Braisa says, and the same thing is true regarding a guma, was it going on the first point or was it going on the second point? And that's exactly the Gemara's question. My lava seifa, isn't it going on the second point? That when it's 9 tefachim deep, we're going to consider it to be part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim, and that would then side with the position of Abaye. The Gemara says, lo, a resha. No, not necessarily. It's going back on the resha, and that tells me that the only thing that we're comparing is the hole to the kupa when it's 10 tefachim. When the kupa is 10 tefachim high, it's Rishos HaYachid. When the guma is 10 tefachim deep, so it is going to qualify as a Rishos HaYachid, but it doesn't support that which Abaye says, Eisve. As we now turn to the top of Ches Amud Beis, so we're going to learn together a Braisa. Braisa over here is describing the halacha of Erev Chatzeros. Erev Tchumim. Now, in order to facilitate understanding of Erev Tchumim, so let's just go over some of the basics regarding Erev Tchumim. Erev Tchumim is the allowance, it provides an allowance for an individual to be able to walk beyond Tchum. As we're going to be discussing this extensively in Masechta Erevin, a person is only allowed to walk on Shabbos only 2,000 amos beyond the city limits. A person cannot walk more than 2,000 amos. However, if he were to make a makom shvisa. I'm going to say this quickly over here, and obviously in Erev, and we're going to be discussing this in much greater detail. If a person were to take his makom shvisa, his point of center, and move it from where he's living to outside of the city, so that now becomes his new point of center, and that would be able to extend the area in which he can walk to, where now he walks to his Erev Tchum, and from there his Makom Shvisa, and from there he would just simply walk to 1,000 Amos beyond his new Makom Shvisa. In order to make a Makom Shvisa, it's very simple. You just simply put food in that area before Shabbos. And another very basic rule is that you have to be able to access your Makom Shvisa from where you are currently situated. And so with that stated, so let's see the brisa together. Niskavin, Lishbos Bereshos Rabbim. Let's say that you designated a place where it's going to be your new Makom Shvisa, and it happens to be that you designated an area which was a Reshos Rabbim. V'nich Eruva Bebor Lemalam Yutfachim Eruva. Eruva Lamatam Yutfachim Ein Eruva Eruv. Now, where did you put your food? Right next to the designated area. Remember, the designated area is Reshos Rabbim, and it happens to be that you put your food in the pit. And the Braisa makes the following distinction. If the food that you put in the pit is less than 10 tfachim, or lower than 10 tfachim, so your Erev is not good. If it's above 10 tfachim, so then your Erev would be a good Erev. Now, let's go right into the Gemara. The Gemara tries to understand what just happened over here. Hechidami, what exactly happened? Ilema, bebor di isbei asara, ulamala de dale v'usvei, ulamata de tzasai v'usvei. So the Gemara says, what do you think pshat is? Do you think the pshat in the Braisa over here is where the pit is significantly deeper than 10 tfachim, and the distinction being made over here is you hung the food, and it's just a question of whether you hung it above 10 tfachim or below 10 tfachim. So mali mala mali lamata. The Gemara says hu b'makom echad ve'eruv b'makom echer. It's really difficult to understand. If the pit itself is deeper than 10 tfachim, the pit itself represents a rishos yachid. What difference would it make where exactly the food is situated within the pit? So the Gemara says that can't possibly be a proper distinction. So we're talking about where we making a distinction within the actual height of the pit, where the pit is either greater than 10 tfachim deep or less than 10 tfachim deep. Now, it says, Ketani eruv eruv, ama tashmesh alideh etchak shmei tashmesh. Now, when the pit is less than 10 tfachim deep, and let us assume that when we say that the pit is less than 10 tfachim deep, that means to say that it's 9 tfachim deep. We don't have to say that, but at least it's possible to say that. So it's 9 tfachim deep. And we're saying that it, under those circumstances, you and your Erev are considered in one location. And because we're viewing the pit now as part and parcel of the Reshos Rabbim. And so this would now seem to be a fantastic support for Abaye, that a pit that's 9 tfachim deep is still going to be functional for the people in the Reshos Rabbim, and therefore part and parcel of the Reshos Rabbim. And so now, in order to deflect, we can deflect in a number of ways. Zim nemisham le huve ruve bekarmelis. So the Gemara says, no. Really, what we could say over here is that when you set up your makom shvisa, you actually designated the area to be a karmelis that happens to be next to a pit that also is a karmelis. Now, that's a little bit difficult because the Braisa said that you designated a Rishos Rabim. So the Gemara says, okay, the Amai Kari Le Rishos Rabim Lefishen and Rishos Yachid. And the only reason why it's referred to as a Rishos Yachid is just simply in contradistinction to the fact that it's not a Rishos Yachid. But the truth of the matter is it's a Karmelis. We could say that as a Pshat. V'zimna Mishan Le, and sometimes he offers a different Pshat, which is Hu Rishos Rabim Ve'iruvo Be'Karmelis. That really what you designated was in your Makom Shvisa to be in a Rishos Rabim, as is the simple reading of the Braisa. And as far as the Erev is concerned, the Erev is in a Karmelis, meaning that ditch, which is less than 10 tfachim deep, in fact, identifies and labels as a Karmelis. Now, one is not allowed to transfer from a Karmelis to Rishos Rabim or from Rishos Rabim to Karmelis. So then the question begs, how then could this Erev work? In order for an Erev Tchum to work, it has to be that you and the Erev are accessible one to another. But if you made your Makom Shvisa in a Rishos Rabim and the Erev was in the pit, which is a Karmelis, so rabbinically one is not allowed to transfer from the Karmelis to the Rishos Rabim. So the Gemara says that also is not a problem. Rebbe he, because it could be that the author of this price is subscribing to the rule of Rebbe. The rule of Rebbe is the Amar called Avashu Mishum Shvus Lo Gazra La Bein Hashmashos. Now, anything which is rabbinically prohibited wouldn't in fact be allowed during Bein Hashmashos. Bein Hashmashos is a twilight period where the Friday exits and Shabbos enters, and it's a Safek Yom, Safek Laila. So during this period of time, so those things which are rabbinically forbidden are going to be allowed during this Banish Mashos time. The simplest way to say it is that this area, this time period, is a Makam Safek. It's an area, it's an interval of time which is in doubt whether Shabbos or not Shabbos. And so therefore, for rabbinic violation, one would be allowed to violate rabbinic law during this period of time. That is a simple way to say it. It's a bit oversimplistic because there's a number of derabbanans that one cannot violate even during the Banish Mashos period. See the second parak of Shabbos, which actually we're going to get to shortly enough, for a discussion of certain times where you can't even violate Isuri derabbanan during Banish Mashos. But anyway, Rebbe says that you can. We know that the Erev Tchum kicks in at what point in time? During the Banish Mashos period. And so therefore, one would be allowed to access from the Carmelis to the Rishos Rabim, from the Rishos Rabim to the Carmelis, and so therefore the Erev Tchum does in fact qualify as Huve Eruva B'makom Echad. V'lo tema d'chui kamin t'chin alach, ela dafka kamin alach. And the Gemara says, and don't think that I'm just pushing you off. These answers are in fact good answers, correct answers, did none. And over here we're going to learn together a Mishnah that we're going to see also at the end of the Masechta. Ima yarakak mayim. If let's say there was a puddle of water, Rishos Rabim ma'alachas bo, and the water and the puddle of water was going right through Rishos Rabim, hazorik l'tocha dal amos chayev. Throwing four amos in this puddle was going to be chayev, as the person now was mavir dal amos Rishos Rabim. Then v'kamahu rakak mayim. Now when we say a puddle, how deep are we talking about? Pachos miyutfachim. It has to be less than 10 tfachim. V'rakak mayim shirishos Rabim ma'alachas bo. And then the Mishnah seems to basically be repeating the very same point. And if I have this puddle where the Rishos Rabim goes through it, Hazork Latocha Dal Amos Chayev. If I throw it at a distance of four Amos within this puddle, one would be Chayev. Now over here, the Bryce is making the point that as long as the puddle is less than 10 Tfachim deep, so it is now considered part and parcel of the Rishos Rabim. Now Bishlam Rekak Rekak Trei Zimnei. Now the fact that the Mishnah is repetitive, so the Gemara says, I understand how it has to be repeating the same point regarding the puddle. One for the summer and one for the winter. Because in the summer months where it's very hot, and one can imagine that walking through a puddle would actually be a relief. So that can still be considered part and parcel of the Rishos Rabim. But in the winter months where it is not hot outside and there is no relief in going through a puddle, so one could make the argument that the puddles should not qualify as part and parcel of the Rishos Rabim. V'i ashminim b'yamosak shamim. Now, if it was taught to us only in the one time and only in the winter months, agav de mitanif mikrei v'nachis. So in the winter months when you're all muddy, so there is a benefit in going into the puddle as that you're going to get cleaned off. But obviously this benefit does not appear in the summer months. In the summer months there's no rain and you're not dirty, and maybe you can make an argument that there would therefore be no benefit in going in the puddle. So therefore it's tzricha. That's why the word rakak has to be repeated twice. Ela hiluch trei zimna lamali. But the idea that it says hiluch two times, why? Ela shmamina hiluch aideid chak shmei hiluch. Because over here, by traversing through the puddle, even though it is not perfectly comfortable and it is a bit awkward, nevertheless, that still qualifies as hiluch. But tashmish aideid chak lo shmei tashmish. But if it is something where I'm making use of an item, so if that is something which is inconvenient, that does not serve as a tashmish, and therefore it does not qualify as part and parcel of the Rishos Rabim. Shmamina. And therefore what comes out from all this is that we're going to go back to the beginning of this discussion regarding a pit in a Rishos Rabim. The pit is 9 tefachim deep. People could make use out of it, but it is not perfectly convenient for people to do so. And so therefore, it does not qualify as part and parcel of the Rishos Rabim. This was a debate between Abai and Rava. Abai was arguing that even though it's Tashmish Aydei Atchak, it's considered Tashmish. But as we just learned together, it seems very clear from this Mishnah and the way we understood this Mishnah that Tashmish Aydei Atchak does not qualify as Tashmish. And therefore, the Gemara has now supported the opinion of Rava. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Haizirza Dekane. If let's say I have a bundle of reeds and I'm going to be moving it, and I'm moving it in a specific way, Rama Vizakve, Rama Vizakve. And the way I move it is not that I roll it, but rather I pick it up along its long side and lay it down on its flat side. without ever actually picking it up off the ground. And I continue that motion of picking it up along the long side and putting it down along its narrow side. If I continue doing in that manner, lo mechayv ad da'akarlei, one's not going to be chayv until one actually picks it up off the ground. And what the Gemara seems to be saying over here is that when I take an item and I move it from point A to point B, but without picking it up, one would not violate the malacha of hotzah. Now, to say the Gemara as simplistically as we just did is a little bit imprecise. Because if that were true, so then the Gemara would just simply say that if you drag an item without picking it up off the ground, so then you would be pater. But that's not what the Gemara is saying. And so the Rishonim discussed this at length. And just basically to summarize, what the Gemara is in fact saying over here is the following. If I were to drag an item through a Rishos HaRabim, one would be chayav. However, over here, because in this very unusual manner in which you moved this particular haystack, in which, because I didn't roll it, nor did I drag it, but I just simply, if instead of a haystack, let's just imagine that you have a box. And what you do is that you just simply move the box by moving it from one side to the other side. And there's always going to be one point of contact with the ground that's going to be a static contact. And so because there's always going to be one point of static contact, so therefore that is not going to be viewed as motion. Motion is where the entire item is moving at the same time. And so under these circumstances, and only under these circumstances, one be potter. That is probably the correct way to say over the Gemara. We'll do a little bit more for this daf. Amar. Adam omid ali skufa notomi balabais venosin lo. Notomi ani venosin lo. We go back to what we learned together on the Brisa on Davav. In that if you're standing on the yeskufa, the threshold, so one can be handed something from somebody in the Rishos HaYachid, one can also be handed something for somebody standing in the Rishos HaRabim, and we learned together that what you can't do is then you can't do the double transfer of taking it from the Rishos HaYachid and handing it to the person in the Rishos HaRabim. Now, hi yeskufa mai. Now, this yeskufa, what is this yeskufa that we are dealing with? Now, it happens to be that when we read the Brisa back on Davav and Aleph, we already made this point. The Gemara is just going to flesh out what we already said. Ilei meskufas Rishos HaRabim, if we're talking about where the threshold itself is a Rishos HaRabim, notably balabais hamapik Rishos HaYachid Rishos HaRabim. Well, that can't be, because the Brisa gave allowance to transfer this item from the iskufa to the person in the house. And if the iskufa is a Rishos HaRabim, so then you just transfer from the Rishos HaRabim to the Rishos HaYachid. And obviously that's an Issa Doraisa. Vale iskufa Rishos HaYachid. So the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe the iskufa has the dimensions of Rishos HaYachid. So notamen ani ha kama ayam Rishos HaRabim Rishos HaYachid. Well, again, that can't be, because the Brisa said clearly that one could transfer from the iskufa to the ani. So ela iskufa karmelis. So the Gemara says that the iskufa in question over here is a karmelis. So note of anosin lechatchila, the Gemara says, but that also can't be, because the Brisa says that lechatchila one can transfer from the house to the person on the iskufa, and from the street to the person on the iskufa. So that also can't be. So isura mia isa, so that's an iser. Ela iskufa makom pater. So it must be that the iskufa is a makom pater. And as we already said, a makom pater is an area that does not have a base area 4x4 tzvachim. So it's a makom pater. Could go into leis beidala adal, and the Gemara says that straight out. And so therefore this area qualifies as a makom pater, and lechachila one can transfer from the Rishos HaYachid to the makom pater, and from the Rishos HaRabim to the makom pater. V'chi ha'dechi asa Rav Dimi amar Rav Yochanan makom she'im bo dal ha'dal tfachim mota livne Rishos HaYachid v'livne Rishos HaRabim l'chatef alav. And here the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav Yochanan exactly this point, that one would be l'chatechila allowed to transfer from the Rishos HaRabim to the makom pater, or from the Rishos HaYachid to the makom pater, with the only notable exception that you can't do the hachlafa, meaning that if a person wants to be able to carry from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, and he thinks to himself, well, I'll just simply transfer first from the Rishos HaYachid to the Makom Pater, and then from the Makom Pater to a subsequent Rishos HaRabim, so then the Gemara says that would not be allowed, because in doing so, one would get very comfortable with the idea of then transferring from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim. Albeit in this scenario, he did it legitimately, but then he'll just get comfortable with the idea, and the next time he'll do it without the intermediary of a makom pater. Let's just quickly recap the daf. We started with a discussion of Rav Chista, where Rav Chista says that in a Rishos HaYachid, there is no requirement of a Makom Dalad al Dalad. This statement of Rav Chista obviously represents a tremendous chiddush. The Gemara wanted to say that maybe Rav Chista was going in conjunction with the opinion of Rebbe, but the Gemara says not necessarily. The case of Rebbe and the Chachamim had to do with another specific scenario, and then the Gemara did get a little bit complicated because Rashi himself offers two ways to understand how the Gemara is distinguishing between the case of Rav Chista and the case of Rebbe and the Chachamim, and go back over that Rashi. Rashi is the first line on the Amud Aleph. The next thing that we discussed was throwing the barrel into a Rishos HaRabim. And throwing a barrel into the Rishos HaRabim, we made a distinction whether the barrel itself is large or small, or using the language of the Gemara, is its own separate Rishos, or less than the size of its own separate Rishos. And in order to go from a barrel to a Rishos, we had to make the conversion from a circle into a square, and that required a little bit of math, but the basic idea of Abaye is that as long as the barrel is less than the size of Rishos Yachid, so when you throw it into a Rishos Rabim, so one would be Chai because then it has the status of a Kli. If, however, the barrel is larger than the size of a Rishos Yachid, or as large as the size of Rishos Yachid, so it's no longer a Kli, it's basically you're throwing Rishios, and one would not be Chayav for throwing that on Shabbos into a Rishos HaRabim. And then, what if the barrel is inverted? So then you have to take Lavud into account, and a debate amongst the Amoraim whether or not we're going to apply Lavud to the opening of the barrel and say that if the barrel is inverted and the walls of the barrel now are facing the ground, are we going to say Lavud? Are we not going to say Lavud? And that was a machlokas amongst the Amoraim. We then discussed the statement of Ula, where I have a pillar in the Rishos HaRabim that's 9 Tefachim high, and it is used by the members of the Rishos HaRabim. So Ula is of the opinion that this pillar now has the status of a Rishos HaRabim. The question is, well, before we get to the question, the parameters they laid out was that if you have the pillar that's less than 3 Tefachim, so that is now considered part and parcel of the ground. If it's 9 Tefachim, so therefore it is used by the Rishos HaRabim, therefore has the status of the Rishos HaRabim, and anywhere between 3 and 9, so it is a Carmelis. Of course, assuming that the pillar in question is a Makam Dalal Dalal. If it's not a Makam Dalal Dalal, so then it's a Makam Pater. The question then the Gemara dealt with is, what if I had a recess, a pit in the ground that was 9 Tefachim deep? Are we going to say the same principle? It can be used by the public, but it's certainly not going to be easily accessible. And is that going to have the status of a Rishos HaRabim? And that was a debate between Abai and Rava, and that took us through a good part of the daf as Rava defended his position that Tashmish Ayideh Adchak is Eino Tashmish. And the Gemara successfully concluded that Tashmish Ayideh Adchak is Eino Tashmish, and the Gemara supports Rava's position. We then dealt with the question of moving a haystack, where I'm not rolling it, nor am I dragging it. I'm just simply moving it top over bottom under the circumstances. So we learned that one would be putter from the malacha of hotzah. And as we explained, because when you're moving it top over bottom, so there's always going to be one static contact point between it and the ground, and so therefore that is not considered a hotzah. And then finally, we're going back to the braisa on daf vav, when we talked about transferring from a shus yachid to the iskufa, where it's perfectly allowed, so the Gemara just simply concluded that the iskufa in question has to be a makom patur. Otherwise, it either would be an issa deraisa, if it was a rishus yachid and you transferred a rishus rabim onto it, or it'd be an issa derabanan if it were a karmelis. So therefore, it must be a makom patur, and the Gemara successfully concluded that the iskufa in that particular case is a makom patur.